Zaxby's just out-Philly the Philly again. The Zaxby's Chicken Philly is back with garlic aioli, sautéed peppers and onions, decadent melty cheese, and your choice of Zaxby's signature crispy chicken fingers or delicious grilled chicken. But it's only back for a limited time, so enjoy it while you can. No pressure. It's just the greatest sandwich of all time on a ticking clock. Order the Chicken Philly today. Who's got the sauce? Zaxby's.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Good morning, good evening, wherever you're tuning in from. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We have another wonderful show in store for you. Did you catch last week's show with Kamala Kapoor? It was a wonderful show talking about aging and getting older and how to accept that and use that as a spiritual practice. I think if you miss that, it's an important show. I like having the important conversations. So please check that out. But today, welcome. We're going to start off, as we always do, with a blog post from a couple of years ago. And this one is entitled, "The Result of Our Inner Work Are the Miracles Life Has Yet to Bring Us." Sometimes we wonder why we do all this hard work, going through our deepest trauma and feeling those unprocessed feelings. We work on ourselves and then more stuff comes up. Staying on the path can be challenging when there doesn't seem to be an end in sight. How many times do we have to feel raw and vulnerable? Why do I have to keep processing these long-forgotten, painful times of my life? When we commit to the path of self-development, we sometimes don't know what we're in for. And as we explore and examine and transform who we are, can get tiring at times. We can lose the desire to continue when we feel as if we're not getting anywhere. It can seem like our internal work is a bottomless pit of nuts to unwind. Being disheartened is not unusual or unexpected until something amazing happens. That moment when suddenly we see the result of all our effort. Perhaps it is a miracle in our health, or we finally meet the person of our dreams. Maybe that opportunity we always wanted to be able to shine, on stage or in our community just magically shows up. That's when we can look back at the long and winding road we have been on and know that it was worth it. This transformation may seem to come out of the blue, yet in reality, it was something we had been cultivating the whole time. While we were distracted doing our work and digging in deep, we were also healing and growing. The miracle we just experienced did not come out of nowhere. Indeed, we had been paving the path for it to show up for many years. all those dark nights of the soul we endured was for this very moment. The tears we shed, the pain we felt, it was all for something more than we could have imagined. For when we step onto the path of growth, we truly have no idea where it will lead us. It is only in hindsight that we can see clearly the great service we have been doing for ourselves. So when the days seem dark and the times feel so challenging, know that there is something more waiting for us. We are not meant to suffer through our lives, and life will reward us in ways we can't fathom at the moment. Stay on the path. Keep moving forward. It is the only way to see what miracles are in store for us. So what can you hold on to when you are struggling to keep your spirits up? So I believe that this is something I wrote about a couple of years ago when I started working with some folks who had already done a lot of work. They were in therapy. They're doing other kinds of healing work before they came to me. And they, you know, we started working together, and they were just like, when is it all going to be over? Like, when am I going to feel better? How long is it going to take? And there's just this, and I had so much empathy for them of like, we're doing this deep work, we're feeling miserable, we're slogging our way through, like, when does it all get better? And you know, sometimes it's hard to really be able to tell that, like, while we're going through all this stuff, while we're facing our own inner battles, and it can feel like we've been doing it for so long, the truth usually is that even though it may feel like a long time, it may feel like, you know, years, it took us a lot longer to get where we are. You know, it's a lot less time than what we spent being in trauma or being in pain, being in our healing path. But I get it. You know, we're working on this path, and we start off and we just want to feel better. We're just looking for some relief. I understand. I get it. But I think what came to me and how I spoke to this person in particular and a couple of people was to remind them that, you know, there is no such thing as an overnight sensation. The most overnight sensations were years and decades in the making. And the same thing is true for our healing path. The same thing is true for our spiritual growth. The same thing is true for life in general. That even though we may feel like we're stuck in our pain, we're stuck in our past, we're stuck in our trauma, and we keep reliving and going through it and releasing all this anguish and suffering, and it seems to be almost a bottomless pit, and we keep doing more, what we don't see, and what we can't see, because it hasn't fully manifested yet, that each session we go to, each ritual we go to, each ceremony we work on, each time where we're really being present to our pain and our trauma, we're lightening up our nervous system. We're taking a step forward in a very positive direction. And it may not be apparent in our day-to-day life. It may not be apparent in how we feel. But one day, you know, someone once said it takes longer than we think it will, but it happens quicker than we imagine. Then one day, suddenly something happens and there's a breakthrough. And it doesn't mean that like everything is better. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden life is all roses and rainbows and unicorns. No. Life is still life. There's still going to be challenges, and we still need to face what we need to face. But we do have that moment that we thought would never come, where we just felt better. And it's so funny. And this blog post I wrote a couple of years ago, but this particular client who I'm thinking of, we worked together for probably a little over a year, maybe about a year. And this past summer had a huge breakthrough, huge, huge breakthrough. And it was just so wonderful to see, having been witness to how they were so stuck in their pain, how they were so tied up in all the things that had gone wrong, and to see them really laugh and have joy, it just warmed my heart. And I had no idea it was going to happen that night. They had no idea. It was just a breakthrough. And that's the thing. We never, never know where that point will happen, where suddenly some switch is flipped, some barrier is just gotten through. And for the first time in a long, long time, we just feel like this sense of relief, like we can take a breath without feeling like we're suffocating. That moment where we can just be and be who we are, and just find that moment of feeling good after years of not feeling good. And so that's the result of all the work that we've done. And again, it's like that old analogy of when you plant a seed and you fertilize the soil and you keep watering it and you keep watering it, and nothing seems to be happening until one day a little stem pops up and there are a couple of leaves, and then before you know it, it's growing into a plant. But that whole time that we were tending to that seed, something was happening underneath the ground. Roots had started coming out. It had started developing. We just couldn't see it yet. And that's the thing. Just because we're not seeing the result of all the effort and the work that we're doing does not mean that result is not coming. It just takes some time. And when we're in pain and when we're suffering, it's so hard to have patience. It's so hard to be able to say, like, okay, I'm going to, I'll wait and see that. I know the results will come. It's so hard to say that because we have been in pain for so long, or numb for so long. All we want to do is just feel good, to be in our own skin. So, of course, it's not easy. That's why so few of us really do the work to really heal at a deep level. And so this blog post is meant to just be a word of encouragement, a word of to just keep the faith and just know that things are getting better. We just don't see the result of that yet. Stay on the path. Trust the process. Keep doing your work. Keep showing up. If we keep moving in that direction, there is no way that the results cannot come to us. It just doesn't come to us in our timing. It comes to us in the universe's timing. And so having the trust when there's no reason to trust, keeping the faith that things will be better, even though we have no reason to have faith. You know, that's the hardest part of all. Yet if we do, if we can hold on to that little flicker of hope and stay our course and stay with our healing, oh, the rewards can be immense. Immense. So that's my blog post. The title of it again is "The Result of Our Inner Work Are the Miracles Life Has Yet to Bring Us." And you can always find my blog at talkradio.nyc/blog. And there's lots and lots of blog posts in there. So if you like this one, there's plenty there. And don't forget, there's also my book, Everyday Awakening. If you love these readings that I do at the beginning of every show, then you'll love my book, Everyday Awakening. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get on with our show and our main topic. Everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we will be right back in just a moment.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're just having a little problem with my guest. Seems to have the wrong link. I'm going to try it one more time, but hopefully our guest is going to be joining us in just a moment.
Technology. I don't know what to tell you.
Aha, there he is. All good. So let me welcome to the show author, speaker, consultant, coach, and ceremonialist, Dr. Jonathan Ellerbe. Dr. Ellerbe is an accomplished senior leader, keynote speaker, healer, and consultant with a profound understanding of the transformative process and the power of wholeness. As a two-time best-selling author with Hay House Publishing, he has shared the stage with such renowned figures as Wayne Dyer and Deepak Chopra, two people I love, showcasing his expertise across a diverse range of platforms, from corporate boardrooms to wellness retreats in South Africa. His latest book is The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience, Awakening to a Deeper Knowledge of Love, Life, Balance, and God. Is a journey through the seven most common and important spiritual experiences. Oh, glad you finally made it, Jonathan.
I can't say I understand what happened, but it's never worth spending the time to review technical problems, is it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm grateful to be here, though. And I do love your show. And you and I do know each other a bit. And I was really happy to come back and talk to you. So yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So quick question. What got you into this idea of spiritual experiences? Is this something that has been a part of your life for a long time? Is this something that developed later on in life?
Yeah, it's such an interesting story to look back on. I mean, the answer is simple and short, but the life experience of it is long and complicated. So the short answer is that that I had a, you might say, I had a propensity as a young person for spiritual experiences. And I think, you know, at some level, everyone does as young people, if you define spiritual experiences broadly, meaning a greater sense of wonder, maybe a sense of a subtle energy in things, a heightened sense of intuition. And then even for some young people, the experience or perception that maybe they've even encountered magical beings or things like that. But at the same time, you know, a lot of those childhood experiences do also lean into the psychological. Mm-hmm. So we have ideas of, you know, imaginary friends and things like that. Very important experiences, but not exactly spiritual experiences. And what started for happening for me at quite a young age was that the experiences were definitely pronounced. They were notable. And many of them are outlined in the book. So for someone listening that's thinking, what is he even talking about? So it might be a perception of energy in a place and the actual awareness of it, like, hey, there's something here that's not over here, or the perception in nature that maybe somehow there was a kind of spirit in things that was communicating something to me. Now, what was challenging for me and ultimately decades later led to the book was that as I continued to have spiritual experiences into adulthood, and certainly when I was younger, I'd say with alarming frequency and diversity, I was always astonished at how ill-equipped I was to talk about them with others, how ill-equipped others were to think about them or respond about them. And eventually I began to wonder, like, what are other people doing with their spiritual experiences? And over the years, I have found a huge number of my clients have stuffed them down, ignored them, minimized them, felt ashamed of them, wrote them off as, you know, one thing or another, a kind of a brain fart of sorts. So after many years of, you know, study and analyzing the literature and so on and so forth, I thought, wow, maybe this book will help people to realize what spiritual experiences are, that it's a normal, healthy part of being human, what the diversity of common and important spiritual experiences are, how to make sense of them, and how to apply their gifts in our lives. So that's, in a nutshell, the journey from how did it start to what's it about.
Okay, so let's define our terms so people know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So what, and by the way, my wife loves your book, and she like started to look at it, and she's like, oh, I like this, and took it. And so I didn't get a chance to read it, but she read it. So she gave me some questions for you.
Great.
So what is a spiritual experience?
So I'm going to answer that a few ways. And I'm not going to start with how I answer it in the book.
Okay.
I want to start by saying that I would like to find a balance between affirming anything that someone, quote, feels is spiritual. Mm-hmm. Meaning if someone's listening to this and they say, oh yeah, I have spiritual experiences all the time because when I sit down to eat my breakfast, I just feel so grateful. Mm-hmm. I would not want to, from an academic standpoint, dismiss that or minimize that and say, well, actually, that's not an experience of non-ordinary reality. Your consciousness is ordinary and the phenomena is natural, so it doesn't count. So I want to start by saying, let's be careful when we define terms that we don't reduce access to moments of meaning. And I would say to anyone listening, anything that feels like a peaceful or important moment of meaning that you would label as sacred or spiritual, That sounds good. I would cultivate those. On the other hand, to be a little more precise and in the way I'm looking at things, I do try to draw from, from my academic background. And what's common to all of the seven types, and interestingly, if you look at the classic work of William James and the more recent work of neurologist Andrew Newberg, you'll find some similar definitions, which is that they absolutely feel like non-ordinary experiences. Like when it's happening, there is a self-awareness. This something's different right now. This is not like riding the bus. This is not like listening to a great piece of music. This is something has changed in our senses. Something has changed in our perception. Something has changed in us, or we perceive something has changed around us. Another thing that's interesting about these experiences is that they feel as real as ordinary life or more, which is an interesting quality. And this again bears up in the literature over time. People will say, I know I might have been perceiving things differently, but it felt more real than my ordinary life. Right? So even if they experience a spirit or an angel or a sense of oneness with all reality, whether it's a meditative experience, a church experience, a yoga experience, a psychedelic experience, once they enter that quote spiritual experience, it feels like they're in contact with another dimension of our world. And and you know, I could go on, but I think those are some of the key hallmarks. And I would add that there's definitely a different experience of our senses. That's usually a marker of it as well. Now, on the spectrum of experiences, that could be from heightened senses to almost the vanishing of senses. But there's usually a dramatic change in sense awareness. Oh, sorry, which reminds me that William James coined a phrase, a famous psychologist from over 100 years ago, the felt sense, And he argued that in spiritual experiences, we actually feel something that is neither emotion nor thought. It's a distinct category of lived experience that is only known when you have it. So there's a nice little curveball to throw in.
In the book, you talk about an experience you had in an airport. So I'm wondering if maybe you can just relate the basics of the experience, and I have a question around that for you.
Yeah, if it's a story that I think you're talking about, it's actually a really nice one to point out, because I feel, when I try to briefly summarize it, people listening can cultivate this kind of experience. And I believe it's the story of being stuck in an airport. I think I was traveling on the holidays, and it was very frustrating, very stressful. Excuse me. I think I was actually in Denver, now that I think about it. I don't know if I put that in the book, but I still remember it quite vividly. And it was just, you know, it's one of those moments where it just feels like anything that could go wrong did go wrong. And all the disappointments I didn't want were showing up. But I made a conscious decision. So here's a step, right, for people listening, to step back, to allow my feelings, but to observe them, to choose or consider possible reframing. Like, let's, you know, whatever that might be, it could be prayerful, could be meditative, could be doing a little breath work. And I remember putting on music.
So you made that choice before you put on the music?
I think there was an intentionality to it. Yeah. I mean, I won't say I did it as an exercise the way I'm prescribing it. But I think there was a kind of intentionality, like, okay, let's take a breath and let's just see if we can get to a new place.
It would
have been something like that. Now, what happened wasn't quite what I thought I was setting myself up for. I think I was setting myself up for relaxation, a little stress management. But what happened was that as the music played, and I remember it was opera, I remember allowing myself to kind of spontaneously, I don't know if I was wise enough that I could tell people. I did that on purpose to kind of let go of my story of the day and to take a moment to just be present, feel the music. I think I was walking and just be with my senses. And what transitioned.
Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad, which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it? Crunchy wontons? Asian slaw? Citrus vinaigrette? Teriyaki glaze? Sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Sensation Salad, only at Zaxby's.
Was that suddenly it was more than I was listening to music. It was like, I felt like my senses began to open. My sense of calm began to grow. And strangely, almost like out of a movie, it was like everyone was suddenly in the music. They were as if they could all hear it. And the drama of the music was the drama of the people. And the beauty of the music was the beauty of the people. And as I heard different accents of maybe passion, I would see, you know, people at the desk struggling with their canceled flight. And as I heard, you know, the lighter notes of violins playing in the background, maybe I would notice the children. And there was this strange way awareness shifted, and it was like I could see that life really is just a kind of symphony. That even though we may focus on one note or another, one melody or another, one instrument or another, right? The kettle drums can sound really threatening if that's all you hear. Boom, 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 boom. But when you hear them in the concert, when you see how they play a role in the whole story, well, then everything becomes beautiful. It's not entirely good and it's not entirely bad, kind of like the music. I mean, as I say, it happened to be opera. And that is opera, actually, which is opera shows that trauma and loss and betrayal and death is also beautiful. Not beautiful in the sense that we like it or want it, but it's a part of the human condition. Right. It's a part of what connects us. And that's what I took away from that moment, which is like, well, this isn't what I wanted, but this is a beautiful moment too.
Right. So... So, and you kind of classified that as a spiritual experience because it sort of took you out of where you were before. Could that have happened without the music?
Well, yes. So an interesting, you know, question is about conditions for spiritual experiences. And so, again, if someone wants to cultivate spiritual experience, and I try to provide some notes and throughout the book at the end of each chapter, if you want this experience, here's some things to try. And what I'll say is, on one hand, we can set ourselves up for optimizing the possibility of an experience. And they can also happen completely randomly, completely randomly. And many people describe them almost as an act of grace. You know, whether they meant for it to happen or not. And I've talked to people, you know, psychedelics is an interesting topic relating to this, because I've talked to people who've told me, you know, gosh, man, I read your book, but, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll get high and I'll sit on the patio and do some breathing. And I'm like wanting a spiritual experience and nothing happens. You know, and then other moments I'm walking the dog and it does happen, or another moment I'm getting high and, and it does, like, what's going on? What am I doing wrong? And, you know, my answer is there's only so much we can control in life.
Right.
From the neurological, which might be, well, you might have been more stressed that day than you thought. So you just weren't close enough to a place of letting go where spiritual experience could come in. That's possible. But I'm also not above considering that there's much more subtler factors, whether that's the existence of an energy world, the existence of a spirit world, the existence of God or conscious energies. And they may play a part in determining when they want to show up or not. So from the unconscious to the supernatural, I think there could be many things that shape when and why we have them. But to close, I will say that I know basic seems like a funny word, but some, let's say some of the, on the spectrum, some of the first levels, particularly one and two, that really only require present moment awareness and a willingness just to feel and see and be available. And that will optimize an experience, whether you have the music or not.
I gotcha. But also something you said, then the music, like there can be heartbreak, there can be other things, like you, so you don't, it, like you don't have to feel all blissful and perfect, it sounds like, in order to have a spiritual experience.
Oh,
or do you?
No, well, no. So you're, so there's two elements to this question, which is one, the content of the experience and the context of the experience. And I would say, in terms of the context, I'd say both extremes lend themselves to spiritual experiences. So when people are in love, when people get a job, when people win the lottery, right? I mean, there's euphoria that goes with those things. But very often those euphoric moments allow us finally to stop thinking and analyzing and striving. And sometimes just to be present. Like this is a quick, I'm going to try to make this quick and go to the other part. I remember there was a chance, it didn't happen. I was being vetted for the Oprah show. And I got to go to Chicago and sit on an episode and meet a producer. And ultimately, it ended up being Oprah's last season. So it didn't happen for me. But I have to tell you, like, I remember after that meeting and after that show, like going to a cafe to wait for a friend to pick me up. I mean, I was as high as a kite. And everything was like magic and twinkling. And so you could say, well, is that just psychological projection? Like everything's coming up roses. And I'd say, well, yeah, sure. The positivity of the moment was the gateway in that case that allowed me to drop all my analysis and judgment and just see, like, wow, when I'm willing to see it, there are always good things happening. On the other hand, the question about content. Oh, sorry. Context. So great moments can lend themselves to these little epiphanies and spiritual encounters. But tragic and challenging and dramatically difficult and painful moments also do as well. And I would say the research seems to suggest that they might even be more potent. That people in prisons, people in war, right? People in trauma.
'Cause I've had people on my show who, as you said, have been in prison, had a spiritual experience. One gentleman, a good friend of mine, G.P. Walsh, who's a teacher, he was going to kill himself. He was like standing on a bridge ready to jump off when he had this big mystical experience. And so it seems like, especially, I mean, it doesn't always happen, but it seems like when someone's struggling with that sort of life or death, like I'm done, I'm just going to kill myself and be done with it, like then all of a sudden, I don't know, maybe there's some surrender or something, and then they have this mystical experience.
Absolutely. So you're completely right that this is a common phenomena. Common. In fact, some of the research on addiction I came across recently shows that, I mean, this was kind of crazy, but actually it was out of a clinic in New York. I'd have to, I could check it. I don't know the reference right now, but they were willing to state that 100% of their patients who made dramatic recovery in addiction had a spiritual experience.
Wow.
That it was a part of their finally turning it around. Now, we don't need to spend too much time on the analysis. Some might say, so was that because when you hit rock bottom, you just surrender and you're willing for anything to happen? Is it grace that there's another dimension of reality that that does actually want good things for us and intervenes? Is it something about the brain being in such a state of overwhelm that it's flooded and we actually enter a gamma state in which all hemispheres and regions are co-communicating? I would say it could be all those things.
Yeah.
But I did want to say that quickly that the content of spiritual experiences can also not always be positive.
Ah, yeah.
And I wanted to make sure I mention that for people, because sometimes people think, oh, you know, it's always angels and it's always blessings. It's always skipping through flowers. No, sometimes it can be existentially terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think more often than not has to do with the worldview of the person having the experience. They don't have a way to make sense of what they're seeing, so it's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, people can see and feel scary things in a spiritual experience. So getting support, talking to people about it, mm-hmm. researching your experience, it's all important.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, Dr. Jonathan, we need to take just a quick break. And when we come back, I actually want to ask you about sort of, you have these sort of seven gateways. I just want to maybe kind of briefly touch upon one or two of them that you the chapters of your book. And then hopefully we have time before the end to talk about sort of spiritual bypassing.
Yeah,
right. Because a spiritual experience can be used sometimes in not such a positive or supportive way, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Right. Wonderful. Common. So, everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Dr. Jonathan Ellerbe, author of the book The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience, and we'll be right back in just a moment.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be Frank About Health with all of you.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. So Dr. Ellerbe, in your book, you have it kind of divided up into, a little more than seven chapters, but you talk about the experience of truth and beauty, the experience of ordinary magic, the experience of the spirit world, the experience of the cosmic self, of divine energy, of formless spirit, of pure consciousness. The conclusion is the heart of one and all. And so maybe let's just dive into like cosmic self and and pure consciousness. You talk about
you picked some whoppers to talk about.
I like to go deep. We don't have also a lot of time. We only got about 12 minutes left to the show. What do you mean by these things as gateways, and how can someone recognize if that's part of it?
Okay, so trying to be brief for the show, the word gateway in the title may have a misleading quality to it in the sense that, I've written a book about spiritual practices. And if you think of a gateway as the vehicle to get somewhere, that's less what this book is about, although it does highlight vehicles to get there.
Mm-hmm.
However, the publisher felt gateway was important because what it signifies is that even though they are seven different types of experience, they're all bringing you into spirit. They're all bringing you into the spiritual world. They're all bringing you into an altered state, no matter how different they are. And interestingly, the two you picked are distinctly and really interestingly different, because the experience of pure consciousness has been studied for generations, and it is the experience of an expansive awareness that is so unified that there is no content at all. In fact, there is arguably no perception of subject and object. That this is what, particularly in the Eastern traditions, they point to as moments of you know, pure awakening. So everything is one thing, to the point where nothing, right? Because there's no thing when all things are one, right, including the observer. On the other hand, the experience of the cosmic self is very much active and visual, and it's usually in a dream or an out-of-body experience, something like that, where we are perceiving ourselves or having a vision of ourselves as though we were more than our normal human self. It might be a dream of flying. It might be a vision of ourselves moving energy. It's quite literally an experience of a self that feels cosmic and beyond the limits and confines of the daily, daily form.
So super, the experience
super
of
content rich.
Right. Gotcha. So the experience of pure consciousness, it's almost like oneness. I've heard it, for example, like people who've tried 5-MeO-DMT, that there's that complete loss of self, or they call it an ego death. And then all you feel is just the energy and the oneness. And like you say, that there's not necessarily any consciousness to it, but it's just this feeling of joy. However, afterwards we come back, and I've had this experience of just, you come back and then, like, for a while, like, things just seem to work out, everything, like, you're at this, operating at this higher frequency, I'd almost say, but over time, it's sort of, it dissipates and dissipates, and then suddenly you're like back in the world, and like, you've kind of lost that feeling. So are there things we can do to kind of, we have that momentary experience, then we come back and we're back in sort of our normal day-to-day world, right? And the natural drive is, okay, how do I get back to that, or at least move in that direction? Like, I'm not going to say even get back to that, because we can't live if we're constantly in that state, but at least lean in that direction, feel a little something that supports us in that way.
Yeah, I actually have a great analogy that I didn't always use, because I couldn't even relate to it. But I have a son, a teenage son, who plays football, and he's also a huge fan of football. And the simple analogy I would give for people: when you have a powerful experience, keep the game alive. And what I mean by that is, think about the way a fan of any sport keeps the game alive between games. What do? They read about it. They listen to it. They talk to other people about it. They surround themselves with symbols and reminders of it. I mean, it's actually a phenomenal analogy, but very demonstrative of what people can do. So if you had a powerful experience, write about it, talk about it, read about other people who've had those experiences, surround yourself with reminders of its lessons or its feelings, keep it alive. And yes, it may potentiate another experience or not. Most people only have very dramatic spiritual experiences a few times in a life. You know, in the spectrum of spiritual experiences, some can happen every day. And then others are really once a lifetime, and some are not even that common. It would be one in 100 people that might have that experience. Although I will admit, psychedelics, I think, are potentiating the capacity for more people to have more dramatic spiritual experiences, but they need to keep the game alive. They need a healthy context, or what happens is spiritual bypassing.
Okay.
Which is that we take the experience of feeling infinite, feeling connected, seeing amazing things, thinking we've learned something powerful, and then making the assumption, like, we're done with our healing work. We're done with our psychological work. We're better than other people. Now, I'm generalizing a broad number of ways that we might bypass, but we stop doing the work, right? Yeah. We feel like just because we can be more spiritual or we've connected to something more spiritual that now, you know, it's our partner that's wrong, or it's our job that's wrong, or we don't need to look at our shadow. So the term spiritual bypass, you know, which is a whole conversation in itself, is really when we use spiritual philosophy or experience or practice not to face our reality, right, not to integrate the changes. And that's the last thing I would say about it, is it is true that not only can we use the content of spiritual experiences or spiritual bypass, sometimes people pursue spiritual experiences as a bypass to life. So we run off to the retreat center and we never want to come home. We are constantly surrounding ourselves with yoga or meditation or church or whatever it is, and we're just literally avoiding dealing with real life. You might be going to a wholesome place, and I'll say I've done it myself, you know, very easy to feel good about investing in spiritual life and spiritual work. But if you're not
applying it in your day-to-day world.
Correct.
You know, I used to study with different spiritual teachers and groups that were all about ascension and moving up and like kind of escaping this world in a sense. But through my experiences over the last 10 and a half, 11 years or so, I've really come to believe that actually the opposite is true, that we're not here to escape this life. We're here to bring these higher spiritual energies and descend them into life so yes. that we can make the world a better place for everyone to live in. We just got a minute or two, but do you have any feeling for like the purpose behind these spiritual yes. experiences? Is it to escape this world, to evolve beyond this world, or is it to affect this world in a more positive way?
Yeah, thank you. That's such an important question to end on. It is, I think, the last chapter. So if anyone's going to a bookstore to just cheat. Some of the experiences are experiences of spiritual immanence, which means spirit in the world. And some are experiences of spiritual transcendence, which means you feel like you've escaped the world. The mistake is to focus on escape or idealizing life, because it's really not about either. Those are phenomena of sensation, so to speak. It's the content that matters. And what I think is important about all the spiritual experiences is that they do point us towards principles of healthy living, of coexistence, of the importance of compassion and radical acceptance and creativity and the simple awareness that we live in a universe that is abundant with love and wisdom, but we often forget to look for it. We forget to apply it. We forget to trust it. So I think they are always potent opportunities to enrich a life and our world. And I happen to believe, as an interesting note to end on, that there is a kind of, whatever you might say, spiritual or cosmic force that is pressing into our reality and wanting us to feel these things. It's very cliche, but to make the world a better place.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Jonathan, thank you for taking the time to come on the show. I know you're traveling and we had some technical challenges, but do you have any other books you're working on at the moment? And have you come back when you come out with another book?
Well, I have two things that I'm toying with right now. And one is about the significance, the sort of radical significance of a social return to soul. As a concept of self, not something that's, you know, you believe in it or not, but as a fundamental human quality. And that without that, we cannot find wellness as individuals or a society. This idea that soul must be reexamined, reclaimed, reintegrated, and re-understood. But I have to say that as I do that, the thing that keeps pulling me a little bit, and we're only talking about fantasies at this point, because I'm always writing something, you know, I'm also interested, though, at the interplay of psychology and spirituality and this kind of fine line between spiritual growth and spiritual bypass. And I've I've learned about that in my own life, and I've learned about it the hard way, and I'd like to explore that with other people, the way our shadows are helped and hurt by our spiritual journeys. And ultimately it is a process of soul awakening and soul recognition and soul integration.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you. We'll definitely have to find a time in the future for you to come back.
Thank you.
And
yes.
And also thank you for having me on your show. What's the title of your podcast?
Yes. Well, so people can look it up now as The Bone Collectors.
The Bone Collectors.
Yes. And it was previously the Jonathan Ellerbe podcast. But your episode was with the Jonathan Ellerbe podcast. You got into the
Bone
new
Collectors.
Batch. Yeah. So people will see that in The Bone Collectors. Yeah, it's good. It's a really great interview, by the way. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So I hope people will listen to you there.
Yeah, thank you. I hope so too. Again, Dr. Jonathan Ellerbe, author of the book, The Seven Gateways of Spiritual Experience. Thank you so much, Dr. Jonathan.
Yeah. Thank you, brother.
And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in each week. I really appreciate your support. Please, if you enjoyed this interview, please share it with your friends, your family, and sign up. And don't forget, if you missed any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc, on social media, and on all the major podcasting platforms. Thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you all next week.
NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be Frank About Health with all of you.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A-Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A-Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Branku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad. Which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it? Crunchy wontons? Asian slaw? Citrus vinaigrette? Teriyaki glaze? Sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Sensation Salad. Only at Zaxby's.